GNU Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins, EC and Michael with you. We'll be back the next fifth Monday.
Good evening and welcome to Present Edge, 21st Century and Avant-Garde Art Music. I'm Gary McBride and I'll be your host for the next 2 hours. This evening features music by Wang Ji, Clay Allen, Jonathan Melville Pratt, and Yuval Avital. In the first hour, we'll hear music by and my conversation with composer Wang Ji, who is participating in the Colorado Music Festival's online youth musician seminar, July 20 through the 24th. CMF Music Director Peter Unjin, Harumi Rhodes of the Tokosh Quartet, composer Wang Ji, and Colorado Music Festival Orchestra musicians will all be offering sessions throughout the week. For more information, visit centerformusicalarts.org. Wang Ji was commissioned to compose a work for this year's CMF, which unfortunately will not be performed this summer, but I'm hoping that she'll have a chance to come to Boulder for next year's festival. Before we get to the first part of our April 2020 conversation, here's a recent composition by Wang Ji entitled Prelude, Dream, Fugue. Violist Erica Gray and pianist Janice Carissa performed Prelude, Dream, Fugue by my guest this evening, Wang Ji. You're listening to A Present Edge on KGNU. Now, here's the first part of my conversation with Wang Ji from April of this year. Wang Ji is a composer, photographer, badminton player, and softball pitcher who lives in New York with her dog Pilot. She studied at the Manhattan School with Nils Vigeland and at Curtis with Richard Danielpour. She's taught at Curtis Manhattan and NYU. Wang Ji has written over 100 works, including at least 4 operas, 2 symphonies, a ballet, an oboe concerto, and much, much more. On Thursday, July 16, the Colorado Music Festival will premiere a new work of hers called, in the program at least, World Premiere. Wang Ji, welcome to KGNU.
Hi, Gary. Pleasure to be here.
So my first question is, World Premiere, is that the name of the piece? And if so, is the Colorado Music Festival the first orchestra to perform it, or have there been others?
Oh, you betcha.
Really?
Just kidding. The piece, because it's so such a new commission, I have just come up with the title and program note for this piece. I don't usually come up with the title. I don't have a formula how a piece is going to be written and composed and conceived and fleshed out. So title comes to me like a cat, you know, I can't summon it. So I've been talking to the festival. They've been asking for a title for a few months now. And I'm very grateful that they let me procrastinate for so long, because the title literally just came to me last week. Flying on the Scaly Backs of Our Mountains.
It's called Flying on the Scaly Backs of Our Mountains? Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The commission, when I was asked to write this piece for the Colorado Music Festival, the first thing that came to my mind was about the mountains. I love coming to Colorado almost every other year. I look forward to seeing my favorite mountains. I've lived in the Colorado mountains. I came to Colorado for the first time in 2007 to attend the Aspen Music Festival. And just as recently as 2 years ago, I have been rock climbing in the El Dorado Canyon, and I stayed in Boulder. Oh my God, I just fell in love. I am in love. I fell in love 10, 15 years ago, but I am in love with the Colorado Rockies and the way the rocks in Colorado and near Boulder, the El Dorado Canyon, to be specific, the way they feel under my fingertips. I have been all over the faces of that mountain, quite literally.
Wow. Where did you learn to rock climb?
My husband, Fred Child, we met 10 years ago, and we already know that about each other, that we're very much a mountain outdoorsy people. But he had been rock climbing, and he had a intuition that I would love rock climbing. And the first time I was on the wall, this was at least 7 years ago, six, 7 years ago. I've been waiting for this moment my whole life. I can't believe this just happened. And so I've been rock climbing for quite a few years now. And I am not at, of course, the Alex Honnold level, and I would never do free soloing. But Fred and I, we are frequent outdoor rock climbers, meaning that we often go out in the mountains. We go to the Gunks, which is a world-class rock climbing destination near us. It's a 90-minute drive from New York City. We travel when we take vacations. We go to rock climbing destinations. And we were just in Nevada. We climbed in Chattanooga, in Nevada, California. And my favorite climbing trip so far has been in Colorado.
Well, El Dorado is spectacular. I mean, the very narrow canyon, and oh, it's just so beautiful there. How did this influence the work that you composed for the Colorado Music Festival? So you love mountains. How do you turn that into a piece of music?
Great question. Well, it's and to me, this is more an aesthetic issue than a inspirational issue. So what I mean by that is the music has to come first. The inspiration is only there to start the process. So when I conceive a piece of music, what usually happens is that a musical idea I cannot let go of. It's non-negotiable. That idea has to come into life in some way. So that's always the first step. And for this particular piece, it's that energy of that relentlessness of my experience in the mountains. that I thought is appropriate for this particular commission. Especially, it will be played in one of my favorite places on Earth. So I love this project without even knowing that I already love the project. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does.
And so it doesn't even feel like this idea I had to look for. It just came to me. So much of the creative process for me is a mystery. And that is the same I feel about mountains. Mountains are just such a mystery. And it's a mystery represented in this hugeness, that limitless, that boundaryless form. So there was so much freedom in writing a symphonic piece after mountains. Just this idea is the idea of writing a symphonic piece in the spirit of mountains. I can think of 100 pieces that I want to write, or I could write about mountains.
Well, we need to have you in Colorado full time so you can write all those pieces.
I did have another opportunity 4 years, oh my God, it's 6 years now. So 6 years ago, I wrote an opener for the Colorado Springs Philharmonic, and that piece was based on the silhouette of Pike's Peak.
Really? So, how was it based on that? Did you use that as sort of an outline?
Oh, yeah. I did my homework, and I discovered this silhouette. And then I wrote the fugue subject. The whole piece ends in a fugue. And the fugue subject, the theme of the fugue, traces the silhouette of Pike's Peak.
Wonderful.
I wanted to give Colorado Springs their local signature, which is Pike's Peak. And they ended with America the Beautiful as the anthem. And this piece, the performances that are canceled includes 7 or 8 performances of this piece everywhere in the nation. It's been picked up quite a bit. And as you can tell, the mountainous spirit is quite universal, and other people could also pick that up intuitively.
So that's the piece? It was the America the Beautiful piece that you composed for the Colorado Springs Symphony?
It was suggested to me that they wanted to honor America the Beautiful because the text was about Pike's Peak, Catherine Bates, the text of America the Beautiful. So it was suggested to me, and it just felt right, and I had to do it.
Here then is an excerpt from the piece Wang Ji wrote for the Colorado Springs Philharmonic back in 2016, the symphonic overture, America the Beautiful.
Thank you.
Valle Domenic conducted the Colorado Springs Philharmonic in an excerpt from the symphonic overture America the Beautiful by my guest this evening, composer Wang Ji. She was commissioned by the Colorado Music Festival to create a piece to be performed at this summer's festival, but alas, the performance this year was not meant to be. Wang will be part of the CMF's online Youth Musicians Seminar, July 20 through the 24th. Visit centerformusicalarts.org for more information. You're listening to A Present Edge on KGNU. I'm Gary McBride. Here now is the second part of my April 2020 conversation with the composer Wang Ji.
Have you always enjoyed the mountain? I mean, even as a child growing up in Shanghai, right?
Yes. No. My love for the mountains began in the U.S. I moved here when I was 19 years old. And before that, because I really didn't have much opportunity to travel outside of Shanghai, and Shanghai is a coastal city, the highest point of Shanghai is probably just a few hundred feet. I don't know. It's
one of the skyscrapers, right?
I am, I'll take a late bloomer any day to a prodigy. I love, my love for a mountain began very literally in Aspen. I was very reluctant when they invited me to go for a hike. I was like, what is that? I did not understand. What's the fun of climbing and being out of breath the whole time? But I did it. And I'm not the same. I have not been the same ever since.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's the reason that we live in Boulder as well, because there are, I don't know, maybe 50 miles of trails just outside our door. And it's so wonderful to have that.
I'm jealous. As you're telling me this, there was one trip, as I mentioned earlier, I tried to come to Colorado every other year.
Do you go to Aspen when you go to Colorado?
I try to.
Okay.
Yeah. This was at least 10 or 12 years ago. I was hiking Twin Sisters. It's a trail. It's a very long trail in the national park in Boulder. And I was the only person on that mountain that day. And boy, the story I can tell you. And the marmots on the top. When I reached the top, oh my God, I was so worried that I wasn't going to be able to come down the mountain in time before dark. But just being in the mountain by myself, just feeling like I own this air everywhere on this mountain. I'm the only one breathing the air around this huge, huge mountain. It was magical. So I'm very jealous that you live right by my favorite places. One of my most recent trips to Boulder, and I climbed with a couple of friends in the Eldorado Canyon, and it's one of the very well-known routes, but it was early. It was still early spring. So the route was kind of suspiciously cold. I mean, it snowed a few days before. So when we arrived at the route, we couldn't really see. There's a crux on the route. It was a little bit out of sight. So our leader, the lead climber, went up, and he was stuck at the place for quite a while, a good 10 to 15 minutes. And that's usually not a good sign. That's, we were both a little bit concerned. And then he finally said that the crux was iced in. So he had to do a variation. We call a variation. So he had to explore unexplored terrain in order to get past the crux, which was iced in. So I thought if he could do it, I should be able to do it. I was, of course, out of my mind. So by the time I arrived at the crux, sure enough, yes, it was too much ice for me to successfully and safely climb through the usual route. So I had to explore the variation. And my leader said, G, go left. So I went left. Unexpectedly, the left had nothing on it. It was just a sheer piece of wall with very little wrinkles for my hands and feet. So I've almost had to just walk on surface of the wall. And the wall had a little bit of angle, a little bit of slab. So that's very good. And I remember that moment so well, I could still feel it. I thought, okay, this is the moment, G, you have to think 5, 6, 7 steps ahead. I almost never have to, because you can't see. You can't see 5, 6, 7 steps ahead. But right now, I have to think 5, 6, 7 moves ahead as best as I can know in the moment. And I remember 5. I was able to make 5 moves in a row, just trusting that my feet is going to stick. And I was able to get myself to a little wrinkle that is the size of half of my fingertip. And then I got up. I was safe. It was fine. So the number 5 is almost the fabric of this piece. The piece begin in 5. It's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's always the figure of 5. Comes back again and again, again and again. It is the guiding. It was just the feeling that is embedded in my body. The number 5, the feel of 5. And that rhythmic drive of the 5. And that is literally the rhythmic drive that was my lifeline, that 5, feeling of 5. So the piece at this point, since I'm still working on it, I can confidently say that 5 is possibly the most important element in this piece. And but the spirit of the mountain, that relentlessness and that energy, that infinite energy, is also the breath of this piece, sustains throughout the piece. And so far I have the ending and I really like it. It's a big ending. I love when I write a piece, I don't know how it's going to end. I don't know how it's going to unfold. But for this piece, I knew it. I knew how it's going to end. I knew how it's going to build before I even had the idea of the 5.
Wow. Interesting. Well, that answers a couple more of my questions, which is, you just said that you usually like to compose more organically. In other words, yes. There's a germ, you start at the beginning and then sort of work your way through. Am I right about that?
We could work around that idea. Yes. Organically, I can say more about that with Penderecki in my mind, and he just passed recently. When I was at Curtis, I had a master class with him, and it had to do with my first symphony. The entire time, the only thing he had to say to me was, G, what do you think about form? And so that few words had never left me. So for me, form is the absolute priority, which means for me, an organic process, meaning that the form this piece take, it has to be native to the spirit and material of the piece, vice versa. It's not a linear idea. It's a network of idea. And that network of idea has to negotiate as the piece unfold. So what you describe as the two process is actually not exclusive to each other for me. On one day, I could be, I think I'm going to be doing through composing today. I'm just going to write from left to right and see what happens. That's entirely possible. And I have done it, yes. And then there are days I would just sit there and say, you know what? Today, I'm going to write the music that is at the towards the end, after the climax or towards the climax, towards that golden division point of the piece. And then I'm going to figure out whether that moment is going to inform what comes before and whether I'm going to adjust the beginning. So that process of non-linear process is what I think works better for most of the pieces that I conceive as symphonic and as organic.
Awesome.
Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. And getting back to your piece, you said that five is a very important number. So you demonstrated that by just singing a motif that was in mm-hmm. five. But does that have something to do with the larger structure of the work as well? Five?
So far, it's unclear because I am still orchestrating. I'm still working out the details here and there. I can tell you, though, I am not very dogmatic when it comes to what the role of theory and my own principles in terms of the structure of the piece. I'm a rule breaker. At least I fancy myself as the rule breaker. If I tell myself, okay, this piece, I'm gonna spread the number five everywhere, I often find myself stuck. But if I tell myself, I'm gonna do the best I can to illustrate the feel of five, then the structure start to relax and the music start to take over. And that's the space I most enjoy being in. So I've had many years of working with a firm structure, a firm principle for especially for instrumental pieces. But in my recent years, I have had a lot of fun exploring what it means that the piece can write itself and I am just there to be helpful. So in a very beautiful way, and I hope you'll bear with me on this idea, in a way, the mountains that I experienced in Colorado, they are writing this piece. All I had to do was show up with my gear, do the move with the five moves, and just trust I'm going to live. That's pretty much it.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, it's great. I am very privileged to be doing what I do, being a composer and being of service of something as timeless as a mountain and as significant, as extraordinary as the mountains. I'm a mountain girl. I'm biased. I don't get wow. beach. I don't get, you know, parties. But I get mountains. There's not a day that has gone by that I don't think about mountains or rocks or features of a rock or just the form of a climbing route or the hiking trail and and the trees and that windy and you can't even figure out what's next, that feel to completely lose myself in the mountains.
There's more of my April 2020 conversation with the composer Wang Ji coming up on Present Edge here on KGNU. Now more of Wang's music. This piece from 2014 is called Nose on Fire. Thank you. Clarinetist Rain Moore and pianist Stefan Gosling performed Nose on Fire, composed by my guest this evening, Wang Ji. More of my conversation with her coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Present Edge. I'm Gary McBride.
Coverage of breaking news is made possible by KGNU members. One way to help us bring you this coverage is by donating a vehicle you no longer need. Learn more at kgnu.org or call 1-844-KGNU-CAR.
This is KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Now back to my April 2020 conversation with composer Wang Ji.
Your history is fascinating. I mean, you could read music before you could read Chinese?
Correct. And I am talking to you in my third language, my friend.
When did you start studying English? Because you said you came here at 19, right?
Correct. I started studying English, and it was British English. I don't know, 6th, 7th grade, maybe?
Okay.
Yeah, we were sort of the lab rat. China was just beginning to think about what it means to participate in a global economy. So, and I was also the first year of single-child policy.
I wanted to ask you about that, because many parents wouldn't have chosen a female.
Oh, yes, very interesting question, because my family... disagreed on what being a girl means. So I have had the taste of both sides. I have one grandma who is still in denial that I'm a girl, and she pretty much ignores me. But I also had a grandma who, because I'm a girl, she loved me. She passed away, but she loved me so much. She loved me more than she loved herself because I was a girl. And my father also had to deal with the pressure from his parents that I was a girl. So the way he dealt with it is that, she's a girl. Okay, I'm going to raise her as my son anyway. So my nickname literally means G, my son. So my dad called me G, my son. And my mom then had a reaction to that. And so her entire mission in raising me was to raise me to be a proper girl. So I think of that as my greatest fortune, because then I got to taste both. I got to be a boy with my dad, and I get to be a girl with my mom. So I get the best of both worlds. And so I think the way I deal with binary ideas can be, it's my suspicion, can be informed by the fact that this sort of gender role had been first in great conflict in my upbringing. But then because I could live both, that also means that I am the embodiment of both. And that was tremendously empowering for me to experience.
It must have created a lot of pressure for you, because you were the only child, right? And so
yes.
I did read in your bio that you were... forced, I guess, to study many hours a day, and there must have been a lot of pressure on you to succeed, being the only heir of your parents, right?
Mm-hmm. I think the pressure was different from my dad and my mom, because my dad was in classical music, so of course he wanted me to succeed in music, but my mom wanted me to succeed in being a teacher. So they both got what they wanted.
Because you're teaching in New York now, obviously.
Teaching is in my blood. Yeah, I come from 4 generations of teachers in the family. So that's kind of, it's just my second nature. When I was little, I loved to tell everybody what to do. So.
Oh, no. In your biography also, it says that you are part cartoon character. Which part of you is a cartoon character?
Oh, boy. Well, in my spare time, I'm also a voice actress.
Really?
For puppet shows. In Mandarin. Sometimes they pay my bills, which is very nice. I'm going to actually need some now that a lot of performances are canceled because of COVID-19. And my very recent gig, which I enjoyed so much, I was the voice of a 8-year-old girl and an 8-year-old boy in a puppet show that teaches Mandarin to French kids. So my voice is famous in France, apparently. I'm also the voice of the Burger King training videos in China. My voice can also be heard in some video games as some deranged soldier and evil AI and all that.
What a great superpower to have.
So the cartoon character part is that I just thought working with those puppeteers, and these are some legendary puppeteers that worked on Sesame Street, you know, some Michael Frith and Kathy Mullen and John Kennedy. You know, these people are as good as they get. Oh my God, I just love working with them so much. So the cartoon character really comes from my playfulness, I think. I don't ever want to lose that. I'm unlikely going to lose that. I'm always going to be a little bit goofy. My mom is like this. My mom is very goofy. I love her to death. And she just couldn't stop laughing when we talk on the phone. She's been quarantined, but for over 2 months now in China. And every time we talk, she just can't stop giggling and laughing. And so this is just the way I grew up. And then and we're very playful with each other. So the cartoon character, I think the other part about the cartoon character that I think informs my artistic work is that I love this idea of a caricature. So when I think of a character, especially a character that has the representation that is effective enough with theater and for concert halls, for stage especially, I'm interested in what is that exaggeration mean? What is an effective representation of a character in that particular space? It can't be the reality. This is not realism. Right. It's not the reality of the
character. No, it can't be because it's stage. And so you're choosing what should I exaggerate, right?
So,
to make it come out.
But cartoons, you know, it's just something that I find to be so much of an essence in this type of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Because cartoons already are exaggerations, right?
Right. Yep.
You have a wide range of interest. Mm-hmm. And also you won some sort of national competition,
the Science Fair Award, right? Yeah.
And you were offered a scholarship in physics at a university?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Back then, that's how they recruit people. They hold these competitions. It was very competitive, and they were just figuring out how to do that in China. You know, reestablishing a kind of education, education infrastructure, because it was all broken down during the Cultural Revolution. So there was a lot of rethinking, rebuilding going on, and competition was one way they could quickly vet the most talented kids. So my interest for science, and I still am, this is a big part of my life. You know, on days that I am kind of tired from composing, pretty much I've drained myself from composing, the very relaxing thing I can do is to read medical journals to read to read papers in science. I find that,
you know,
I find that very relaxing.
You know, this is backwards, right? You're supposed to be a research scientist who relaxes with music. You've got it the other way around.
Oh, I have plenty of friends that do that. So, you know, my ego says, gee, you have to be different. So be a composer, write music, and then read medical journals for relaxation. The best birthday gift I've ever gotten was this. My husband got me this book of specimens of diseases.
Specimens of what?
Pathology. I was because of my interest in medicine and my interest in photography, so my husband got me this coffee table book from the American College of Physicians, I believe, in Philadelphia, and the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia. Very few people know about that museum, but it has photographic. It's very beautifully shot. There are specimens of diseases.
So you mean the actual sort of amoeba or the cell of what the disease looks like?
And skeletons. And skeletons.
Oh, diseased skeletons? You mean
yes.
Ravages of disease? Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I think my fascination with disease ultimately is my fascination with change. I think I have a beef. I have an axe to grind with our time zone, meaning the way the speed time moves in human life. Like a day is 24 hours, an hour is 60 minutes. I don't think I've made peace with that. So I've always had this, urge, and sometimes it translates into a bit of anxiety, is I want things to happen faster. I just feel like everything is so slow and so still. So I want something to happen. I want change that I can notice, I can sense. So disease kind of does that. When a disease happens, a lot of changes happen. And
very quickly, yeah.
Yes, and some very slowly, some chronic disease very slowly. But it's about change. Disease is about how that disease changes a healthy person. And also in music, in my own work, because I have this restlessness in me, and I am very tuned into when my music kind of have already spent that energy in these few bars, I don't dwell on that. I have a tendency to keep the energy to have whatever at my disposal. And I want that energy and that change in that energy to be noticed and to be heard and to come across to my audiences. I assume if they capture me, so in the best case scenario, if they capture me, I have a better chance of capturing my audiences.
Wang Ji, I'm so glad that I had a chance to talk to you.
Thank you so much
for joining me.
Oh, this is a pleasure. Thank you, Gary.
Composer Wang Ji was commissioned by the Colorado Music Festival to write a piece to be performed by the orchestra, we hope, in the next season. In the meantime, she will participate in the CMF's online Youth Musician Seminar, July 20 through the 24th. Visit centerformusicalarts.org for more information about that. And visit coloradomusicfestival.org to learn about their virtual performances happening right now until August 1st. You're listening to A Present Edge on KGNU. Now, one more work by Wang Ji before we say goodbye. Here now is her first symphony, performed by the Buffalo Symphony Orchestra under the baton of Joanne Folletta.
Thank you. Thank you.
Joanne Folletta conducted the Buffalo Symphony Orchestra performing Symphony No. 1 by my guest this evening, Wang Ji. This is Present Edge on KGNU. I'm Gary McBride. Now, on to music of a member of the composition faculty at the University of Colorado right here in Boulder. And just last week, Clay Allen dropped a new album entitled As Nieres, and I have three cuts that I'll share with you right now. We'll start with the opening prelude, subtitled In a Letter.
Thank you.
That was music of Clay Allen off his brand new album of electronic music called As Nieres. We heard the final cut entitled YC 2006 Postlude. Just before that, Centennial. And to start off our mini set, In a Letter Prelude. Music of Clay Allen, who for the last few years has led the Pendulum Contemporary Music Concert Series at the University of Colorado, just a few miles from here up on the hill in beautiful Boulder, Colorado. You're listening to Present Edge on KGNU. More music after this.
Support comes from No Credits Productions, LLC, presenting Destination Freedom Black Radio Days, a podcast series that examines modern-day stories about police violence, immigration, and gender bias. The series offers profound stories, community conversations, and a musical guest. Destination Freedom Black Radio Days series can be found wherever podcasts are available and nocredits.com.
Coming up in a bit, an online music collaboration project by the Israeli composer Yuval Avital. But first, here's a composition for strings, percussion, voice, synthesizers, and laptop by Jonathan Melville Pratt, entitled Two-Way Dream. Originally written for Camille Brown, it was set on the Alvin Ailey Dance Company last December in a piece called City of Rain.
Thank you.
to A Dream by Jonathan Melville Pratt, originally written in 2011 and rescored in 2016, set on the Alvin Ailey Dance Company just 7 months ago in a piece called City of Rain. Musicians such as Pratt are being hit hard by the COVID pandemic. I urge you to support musicians and musical organizations whenever you can. Another way musicians are surviving quarantine is by collaborating. The Israeli guitarist and composer Yuval Avital has created on YouTube a global participatory online dance and voice project called Human Signs. They produce a new collaboration every week, and the seventh ensemble dropped just 6 days ago. Here's a sample entitled Mantra. composer Yuval Avital, with a host of other online collaborators, created this edition of Human Signs called Mantra. They create a new music and dance work every week on YouTube. Search Yuval, Y-U-V-A-L, Avital, A-V-I-T-A-L, or Human Signs Dance to find them. Well, that's all for Present Edge this evening. I'm Gary McBride, and I hope you've enjoyed our latest sampling of 21st century art music, and that you'll join us every Monday evening at 10 o'clock right here on KGNU. Coming up next, Sleepless Nights. This is KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
What's happening, so-called woke folk? Let Baby Boy holler at you for a minute. Won't take nothing but a second. Allow me to be of assistance to the endeavor which you embark upon. In other words, you know I'm that joker. Take you where you need to go. Can you play the ups game? Get up, dress up, and counter. Here's a whiz, this word of wisdom. Oh, ain't nobody mad, but the folks that don't get none. Don't be mad. This carry 24. whole Kingo. Choose what whomsoever ails your missing form of step or lack thereof. That top flight show five winner shout. Triple Beam Mathematics. Everybody here sold out. Standing room